Hi, I'm Nancy. I'm an alcoholic.
Nancy.
I want to thank the group for allowing me to share me with you. It helps me a lot more than it helps you, I'm sure. Just review of step one, which to me, if I don't have a strong step one, I'm in a lot of trouble. I did not have a strong step one coming in here. I compared instead of identified. And believe me, when I'm comparing me to all of you, there's no comparison. I find every difference. I find nothing in common. And again, I was looking for a way out of here. I was looking for you to tell me you don't belong, because I did not want to stop drinking. I was not sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was delusional. I should have been sick and tired of being sick and tired, but I wasn't. I thought I was still having fun. I remember my then husband visiting me in rehab saying, another great thing of his, you know, you aren't having fun at the end. And I said, oh, yes, I was. You know, and he kept saying, no, you weren't. I said, oh, yes, I was. And the truth is, I really wasn't. You know, maybe there was fun sometime, but certainly my life was very unmanageable. And the unmanageability is not the same as the insanity. We know that insanity is not the silly and stupid and crazy things I do when I'm drunk. That's just silly and crazy things that I do when I'm drunk. And get anybody drunk, they're going to do something that they don't normally do. And I did a lot of that. But the unmanageability did have to do with life circumstances. My life was very unmanageable. I was no longer speaking to my husband, or he was no longer speaking to me. We were communicating through email, sleeping in separate rooms. I was doing just, you know, crashing the car, going to work, but going to work under the influence, not being responsible, not showing up. My relationships weren't so great. On and on and on. That was a very unmanageable life, although I did not see it at that time. Everything that I see now, clearly now, very clearly now. But it took a while, even staying sober, for me to understand what was happening in my life as it was getting better. Although it was getting better, I really didn't get the full benefit until after the fact. Way after each step, I would, you know, realize, oh, that was what that was about. I had no button. I could not say no. I have no shut-off button. There was never a time when I said, oh, I had too much, I'm going to stop now, or no, thank you. That's not part of my nature. I want more and more and more, and too much is perfect, you know. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Of course, had a problem with that. I couldn't understand that I was insane. I couldn't understand any of that. And a power greater than myself. I was a pretty strong person, and I had gotten through a lot of trials and tribulations, and always thought it was because of me. You know, wow, you really are a survivor. Good job, Nancy, you know. I know now that it was, you know, God, of course, but I just didn't know that. So that took a long time to I said okay, like I said last week, I was a good little follower, student, and so I would do everything I was told to do because of the result, you know, people telling me I'm going to like the result. And I was all about the prize, you know, it's always about the prize at the end. The consequence sometimes didn't stop me from doing things if I thought the prize was going to be better than the risk of the negative consequence. That's just how I ran my life, you know. So coming to believe, I didn't come to believe at step two, but I was willing. I do believe that it's a spiritual gift that I was born with, that I was given by God, of willingness, because I was willing after a long time, of course, you know, that it took to surrender finally. I was willing to go through the motions, and that's really all it was for me. It was the motions, but I was doing it. And so coming to believe came way after the fact. And my experience with that is I came to believe, thought I was good to go, and then maybe a year later, you know, I kept seeking and searching. That's also another gift of mine. I just wanted more and more and more, because I want more of whatever I'm feeling good about. So then like a year later, for example, I say, wow, I thought I was good then. Now I'm really good. Then a year later, you know, that's how my life just always was. I always think I'm good until I'm better. And then I'm better and I'm better. So So in 3, I had to make a decision to turn my life and my will and my life over to the care of the God that I had no use for, but again, was being obedient. And I made that decision to continue with this process, just to continue with the process, because the God thing was a difficult thing for me. I was not a hypocrite. I did not do foxhole prayers. I really did not believe there was a God. So I didn't, even when I was in trouble, pray to God. I just, definitely there was no God in my life. But I made a decision to turn my thoughts and my actions over to the care of the group, of AA, of whatever it was going to be to make me move forward. And so I did move forward. Of course, we know that making a decision does nothing unless followed by a course of vigorous action. Again, I went forward with that course of vigorous action, and I had to also realize that I was not the director of my life. That when I was, because you know, in How It Works, it says what we were like, what happened, and what we're like now. And to me, that means what I was like when I ran the show, what happened, my spiritual journey, and what I'm like now that God is my everything. So I had to realize that first decision that I am not God. I am not God. I am not the boss of me or you. Because I am, like it talks about in the book, the actor who wants to run the show. Well, first of all, an actor doesn't run the show. The director runs the show. You know, I don't even know. If I'm an actor, I'm supposed to follow directions from the director. But being the actor, we all want to run the show. And so if I want to run the show, but you also want to run that same show, we're going to collide. And I always wanted to, I always wanted you to say and do and think what I wanted you to do. I remember my son, when he was a little boy, saying to me, "Ma, you want me to be just like you, and I'm not you." That was a little kid. He was under 5 years old when he said that to me. I mean, and it was true. I wanted everyone to be like perfect little soldiers and do exactly what, you know, the general was telling you to do. But it doesn't happen. And when I look back at my record, when I ran the show, nothing worked out great anyway. Nothing even worked out good. It might have been temporary goodness, temporary feel good, but it certainly was not fulfilling. I did not have a fulfilling life. So I went out on this course of vigorous action, making a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. I did it by the sheets. Again, I did not get an overpowering, you know, wow. It wasn't explained to me. I keep saying it wasn't explained to me what I was really doing and why I was really doing it. And for me, if I know why I'm doing something, it just, for me, makes it easier for me to do. So I did it anyway. Did it anyway. And I kept doing it. I did that inventory over and over again. It was the same inventory. But it wasn't until later, actually, it wasn't until I went to a Joe and Charlie seminar that it became alive, that big book became alive to me and just got to my heart instead of my mind. I was a very rational person, and being rational sometimes gets in the way, often gets in the way of a spiritual process, you know, because I'm thinking with my rational mind, and spirituality is, you know, your soul and your heart. So I did the searching and fearless moral inventory. So what does that mean? I have to be truthful. And I don't like the expression, you know, I did the best I could. No, I didn't do the best. I did the best that my memory allowed me to do. Later on in years, people popped up in my mind that I left out because I just didn't remember. Had nothing to do with me leaving them out on purpose or what. It just had to do with they did not come to my mind. And those were people that I had harmed tremendously, the most. I mean, of course, they were guys. And, oh, God, that was a thought. Okay, so when my life changed from being a good, obedient little girl to not, I did what I wanted, when I wanted, how I wanted, with who I wanted. And if I couldn't, I was not a happy camper. And so my inventory now, you know, although I review my inventory all the time, and the way I view it is very different as the years go on. And today, when I did my inventory, I had no remorse, no guilt, no shame. My thing was, I did it, so what? Who cares? Move on. And that's because I had no God in my life. And without God, I don't care what I'm doing. You know, that's me. Without God, does not matter what I do, who I do it with, or how I do it. So, you know, when I look over this truthful fact-finding and fact-facing, I have to find out the truth about me, because I had euphemisms for everything I did. If you did, you know, you were a drug dealer, for example. I was a commodities trader. That's what I really believed. I would tell myself that. And so you were a horrible person, and I was, you know, I was good. It was just my job. You know, or a woman doing the same thing. If she was doing the same thing as me, she was a slut. I was creatively, you know, using my body to show my love. And I believe that. I really believe that. You know, it's a sign of the times, make love, not war, and you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, so I had to find out the truth and use real words. I was a liar. I was a cheater. I was a thief. I can't say I was a slut, because I just can't say that. But I have to find out the truth, and the truth was really hard for me to see. It's not hard for me to see in you, but it's really hard to see in me, you know. And so I had to do this on paper, because in my mind I could twist everything around and make it good and make it right. And so this was very, very important for my recovery, because it wasn't until I did this, till I saw who I really was. You know, if you ask me, I went to rehab and did an intake, and they asked me for a list of my attributes, and I went on and on and on and on. And then he asked me, what's my defects of character? And I was tongue-tied. I couldn't think of one. And that's pathetic. But I just was delusional about me and the world around me. I had to make this list of my fears. Now, I had fears about everything. I was a very fearful little girl. Well, not little. Like I said, everything changed at puberty. Before that, I had confidence. I was self-assured. I would be in piano recitals. I'd be at dance recitals. I had not a care in the world. But something happened. Just something happened to me. And I can't blame it on family or anything. Like I told you last week, I had a very loving family, taught me right from wrong. They did right. You know, my parents were very righteous people. I just was different. I'm different. You know, I'm just different. And for me, the fear, every fear uncovers another fear. Like I could tell you, I'm afraid of being buried alone. Buried alone meaning not with a spouse. And the bottom line is, I'm not afraid of being buried without a spouse. I'm afraid of being without a spouse. You know, and I had to go through a process to get to that. And for me, the bottom line, though, and I always say this, the bottom line fear for me is always that God's will is not going to align with mine. And I don't like that. You know, I want his will to align with mine. Of course, I've learned now that my will has to align with his. And certainly, since I've changed that way of thinking, my life is so much easier. I mean, now it's anything goes. Whatever happens, I'm good with anything. And it doesn't mean that I'm happy about everything that happens. It just means that I'm good. I'm okay. I will never tell you that everything's going to be great. Everything's not going to be great. You know, I've gone through divorce in sobriety. I've gone through my father dying in sobriety. I've gone through loss of relationships in sobriety. It's not always great, but I was good through it all. The hurricane, the flooding, everything. And I was really okay, where I would have been in the bar complaining. You know, that was my thing. Go to the bar and complain to someone who will listen. And I always found someone who would listen back in the day. So then I had to do the sex inventory, which was really hard for me also, because I thought if I was having sex with guys that was okay. Like, they didn't care about anything else. And, you know, perhaps that was true sometimes, but sometimes men do have feelings as well. And I would, you know, we're not the only ones. We're not the only ones. And I did some horrible, horrible, horrible things. Really horrible. I don't even think I'm going to get into that. Not because I'm embarrassed or anything, just because I don't think it's appropriate. But really horrible things, you know, being with one and just going to the next, and brothers and friends, and just thinking there was nothing wrong. Because why? I'm selfish and self-centered, and I'm only thinking about me. I'm never thinking about you with not a God in my life. Never. Harms done others other than sexual. That was my stealing and not showing up, you know, a lot of that stuff. My inventory is all about sex and money. Sex and money. I'm a very greedy person. I want everything that I want. I want a world full of, you know, my perfect world is, I don't want you not to have. You can have also what you want, but why can't we just have everything we want? You know, just take it. Because you may not want what I want. Why can't we just all have it all? But that's not how it works. So I'm lazy and greedy, a terrible, terrible combination. I don't want to work for anything. I want to just get and have and take. And I, you know, if I found an easy way to make money, I was in on that. You know, all kinds of scams and all that stuff. You know, I'm in on that. And by the grace of God, I was never caught. And I never thought, because I don't think I would do too well in prison, you know. You know, the things that I did, I very possibly would still be in prison, you know, for things I did a very long time ago. So those are the things. Did I leave anything out? Wait, sex, resentments, fears, and things. Okay. So now I have to admit to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. I have to find out the exact nature of the wrongs, which is not the thing I did, you know. It's nothing. I just want to go back to resentment. The person, what they did, what it affected. What part of self did it affect? And it always affected my financial security, my sexual security, my, you know, ambition, which I had none. I had no ambition. And I was very smart, but I did not want to do it. Fear. Fear of not being as smart as everybody thought I was. Fear of not being able to do that, you know, to go to school and finish and all that. So I just quit, you know. I'll just quit before I fail. But when I did these resentments, then I had to, and it's very, you know, then I had to forget about the person I'm resentful of, forget about what they did, forget about what it affected, and I have to concentrate on what part of me, what did I do wrong to start everything, which I did. I mean, I'm just telling you, my thing is, I started everything. Everything. I don't think there was one person on my inventory that started anything. I always started, we step on the toes of our fellows, they retaliate, and then I'm pissed at them. It's like, I punch you in the face, you punch me back. How dare you punch me? You know, forgetting totally that I punched you first. I mean, it's ridiculous, but that's the way it was, you know. So I have to totally forget, and I do have an example of that I will bring up. There was a person that borrowed an exorbitant amount of money from me and never paid it back, was never going to pay it back, made it clear that he wasn't going to pay it back, and I was livid, livid. It was a lot of money. And I had to do this process on, you know, go through this process with this. And I will tell you today that you can mention that person's name. You don't know the name, but I can think of that person and think of how sick that person was. And I could think of me and how sick I was, because I could have said no. But I always said yes for reasons. I wanted you to like me. I didn't want you to leave me. I didn't want you to be pissed at me. I didn't, you know, terrible reasons to say yes. I never said no. And got me into a lot of resentful situations. I can tell you today, though, I could look at all those situations and see where I precipitated it all. And I cannot be resentful against those. I have to forgive. And the thing that I always say about forgiveness is, if I want you to forgive me, how dare I not forgive you? You know, and that was how I used to live. I wanted you to forgive me for everything, but I could be pissed at you, you know. Thankfully, it all makes sense. It all makes sense to me now. So the fear. So now I have to share it with God, who I still really wasn't so great with. I really wasn't in a great relationship. But okay, God, I'll tell you. You know, tell you what I did. You were there anyway. You saw. You know, if there is a God, you were there. You saw it all. You heard it. You know, telling the other human being at that time of my recovery was not difficult. And I'm going to tell you why again. It's all about God. With no God, I wore these things like a badge of honor. My escapades were like a badge of honor. And I could tell you anything I did with who I did it and how I did it because it was like cool. You know, today it's a whole different story. Today it's, you know, today it's, so there was no guilt, remorse, and shame. Because when you don't have God in your life, there is me. When I don't have God in my life, I have no guilt, remorse, or shame over anything I'm doing. I really don't. It's totally acceptable for me to do whatever I want. And today, thankfully, you know, I'm in relationship with God, and so I look at this inventory quite differently as I did so many years ago when I first did it. You know, now I'm first reconciling my, you know, and really feeling, not that I live in shame, remorse, and guilt, but I realize how wrong I was. I realize how wrong I was. When before, didn't bother me at all. Didn't bother me at all. When I was doing my thing, it didn't bother me at all. So they have insurance, they'll get paid. You know, I had reasons for everything why I shouldn't feel bad about that person, that company, or that person, you know. So like I said, admitting this to this person had no effect on me whatsoever. I went through it like just, you know, yeah, I did this, 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 and this. Big deal. So what? Who cares? You know? But as I went on seeking and searching this power, I told you last week that I did admire it in other people. I really wanted what you had. I wanted that relationship. And I sought and seeked, and you know, God comes to those who seek him. And it's been an ever-changing thing for me over the years, and I suppose it's going to change even more, although I am on such a high now that I can't imagine it changing, but I suppose it will. So now when I admit it to God, I mean, I have recently as much as cried out to God, I am so sorry. I mean, it just got to me in my heart, the things I did, because now, to me, it wasn't that I did it to you. Now it was I did it to God. To me, it was disrespecting God to behave that way to people, to his children. So it just is a totally, totally different experience for me now. I did, though, even though it wasn't at that time such a strong reaction, I did find these defects of character objectionable. When I found out in black and white that I am selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, fearful, and inconsiderate, and I had to own that, because first I had to find these things out, and then I have to own it. Facing, to me, is owning it. I can find them, you can tell me what I am, but I have to really internalize it and feel it. Because when I finally felt it, I did not want to be that. I did not want to be selfish and self-seeking and inconsiderate and selfish and fearful. I did find those things very, very objectionable. And for me, if I don't find them objectionable, I'm not going to want to change. Why would I want to change things that's acceptable to me? So that was very, very important. Very important in my changing, because let's face it, this is all about change. And I said last week, I didn't think I had to change at all. I thought I had to stop driving while I was drunk, and because I crashed the car every time. And that's what I thought I had to do. And I looked at all of you, and maybe you had to change. I understand that you have to change, but I did not really think I had to change. I thought I, you know, and that's the delusion of the alcoholic. So it was crucial, because if I was to change and go on with the process and do what I had to do and pray and all this to change, I had to really accept, and I really did accept that I had to change. And that's it.